Hello, this is Ken Penzel here checking in. I just wanted to get another little bit down on the podcast, and I guess I wanted to talk to people about issues of education. One of the things that gets discussed a lot is what are we going to do about education? And of course, there's all sorts of points of view, good and bad, and so on. And I just want to give kind of a general overview of where I want to go with education. One, I want to make sure when we think about education, obviously, we're looking at holistically how somebody emerges in the world from the point they're born and so on and so forth. What kind of information are they receiving? What kind of stimulus are they receiving? And part of, I guess, our education is getting in touch with our senses from a very young age and being able to understand our own sense of intuitive creativity and our own kind of sense of understanding of nature and the world around us, and becoming educated through our senses is part of that evolution of who we are as a person in the world. And so, obviously, from a young age, we ideally, you know, we want young babies, I mean, to be in touch with nature, be out in nature, play a lot, you know, be able to play. And then also, we have to decide how much external stimuli we want and how much internal kind of intuitive emerging creativity we want as a child grows up. Do we stick a child in front of a TV? Do we basically make young people passive observers? And that can be applied all through life in general. I think that's part of keeping us educated about many things that we don't necessarily know how to quantify. Beyond that, once a young person is in schools, you know, what are the conditions before a young person arrives in that school? That needs to be asked as well. Does a young person have food in their belly? Do they have a stable community? Do they have capital investment and housing and health care and so on? So when they arrive in the classroom, they're prepared to learn. And then, you know, what's the size of the classroom? Is it, you know, 40 students or 20 students? I'm working towards making sure we have that 20 students. And these are promises that were made by many in the past and have not been kept. As many of you out there who are listening may know, this class sizes have grown in many areas. And that has created a very difficult task for the everybody involved, the student, the teachers, the administrators, and everything. Smaller class sizes, more personal contact, better learning environment. And then also, what's the condition of the teacher? I mean, is the instructor, you know, getting paid well? Are they stable? Do they have a stable environment to learn in? And then, of course, what is the learning we're doing? Is it testing? Is that all we're doing, preparing for tests all the time? Obviously, we need to know. They have somebody who knows how to read, write, you know, and do arithmetic. I understand that. But how much do we offer for creative outlets in the classroom? And once again, getting in touch with our senses. How much play time is there? And so on. What's the size of the school itself? I mean, if we look at you know, a small school, ideally you're trying to keep the elementary schools around 400 or 500 students, local to the community. The middle schools, you know, maybe about 800 students at most, and the high schools probably no more than, you know, 1,000, 1,200 students. So that would be an ideal, you know, number of students in the schools. So we keep them small, keep them local to the community, and so on. We also, of course, have the experimental schools out there, the schools that are, you know, schools of choice, I guess, school options that are available, magnet schools, charter schools. Homeschooling is an option as well in the state. So I'm not going to eliminate those as options. I want to maintain them probably at the levels they are with accountability that's built in already at this time. We do have to be vigilant on that. I do not believe in taking public money for private schools at this point. I just don't agree with that. We are at a point where we need to invest in the schools and the teachers and make sure there's an equality in education in the society. One of the things that we need to look at, and we can't look at schools as a monolith, especially K through 12. What we need to do is make sure that we're looking at the situation regionally. What's the condition? Has there been capital investment in this community? What's the condition of that community before somebody arrives in the classroom? And that's something we keep getting back to. So each region is going to have a different response, and we have to be honest about that, and we can't just paint everybody with the same brush because there are clear disparities. Is it are culturally sensitive areas, especially, you know, let's say in, you know, areas around the state where we have a large Latino or Hispanic population, or Hmong communities or Somali communities, you know, African American communities, indigenous communities, where there's, and many more than that, but there is need for some cultural sensitivity. I do believe in multicultural society. I think it makes us stronger. It makes us more aware of not only our own communities and the people we live with and a shared experience that we need to understand as well, but also that there's other people in the world. And it's not just about the United States. It's about all of us on this planet. Understanding other cultures makes us stronger, and we gain respect from around the world. Learning other languages makes us stronger. We not only become more flexible in our interactions with other countries and other cultures, but we also gain respect around the world. And respect is a part of our security. Many countries who no longer respect us may not consider us that important and may not care too much about what happens to us as a society. So there's an, you know, reciprocal relationship as well as just our own sense of understanding our place in the world and being able to understand others' conditions in the world as well. The empathy is very important. So this is kind of where I'm going. I'm talking a lot at this point, but just wanted to share with you a little bit of kind of my thinking about where education through K through 12 would go. And then beyond that, generally what I'm trying to do as governor is establish a learning environment, just where we can learn at any point in your life post-high school. We want to be able to have people who walk into schools and be able to advance their own sense of knowledge in the world, be able to be flexible on the types of jobs they're looking for, because not necessarily do we need to have to get a degree to advance our education, and not to take away from getting a degree. That's great. But there are some people who may not want to go that far. They may just want to learn a skill. They want to learn a craft. They want to be able to adopt their own businesses, be entrepreneurial. There's many different levels of participation in the culture. They may want to become a farmer, and there may be extension programs that we can utilize to help transition young people into farming, which I think is an important part of our survival in the future. One thing I wanted to go back on in the K through 12 was I want to also make the schools their own power stations. So not only are the schools self-reliant and energy and efficient renewable energy, I also want to have schools be able to grow their own food. Not only to make the food in the lunchroom, make it available to the lunchroom, make it more nutritious, but also to offer a skill to young people as they grow up, knowing how to grow their own food, and that will carry on into our lives, and it's a survival skill. A lot of people have lost that. My generation lost basically the connection between energy and where it's coming from. And they also lost the connection between food and where it's coming from and how it's produced and so on. This is a high-risk scenario. I mean, food and energy are basically survival right now, and also how we take care of our resources. So these are very key components to survival. Also, I want to make sure that we have strong civics in the classroom, and I want to make sure that we have a strong commercial I don't want a commercial environment. Actually, I don't want a commercial environment. I want to remove commercial interest from the classroom. I want to make sure it's free of using young people as a target market in the classroom. I think that's very deep concern about the commercialization of our culture in general. So overall, what we're talking about is the ability to think of the schools more holistically. And in rural areas, we're also looking at schools becoming more of a community center, not just for education, but for other purposes like maybe health clinics, for also advance opportunities for social gatherings, and so on. And some schools are already adopting this, but we want to make sure that we can continue to make schools all-purpose based upon, you know, limited resources and more of a community-based environment. So that's also a transition that may take place based on regional needs. This is something we need to think about very clearly, and much to talk about and try to cover a lot quickly, but hopefully, you know, it'll give you the sense of where we're going. Then in the higher education, of course, we talked about the learning environment moving forward anytime, and this is for the young and the old alike. So it's not limited to age. And if you want to walk into a school, I did this when I walked into Santa Monica Community College in the early 80s in California. I went in, signed up for classes, paid a small fee, and then when I met certain criteria of grades being met, I got my fee back. And basically, the college was free, and it was a very solid education, a great school. And so at that point, what I am realizing is, my goodness, this is the way. Why isn't it like this for everybody? I mean, if we want an education, doesn't it improve our society? People being able to adapt, people being able to grow and learn more, and so on. And instead, what we have here is a lot of people excluded because of the financial constraints, and also because of the tuition that builds up. Students are making decisions, a lot of them, based upon their debt. And that debt carries with students for long, long periods of time. And it creates a great burden. We say we want people educated. We say we want this. And yet we make it very difficult for them to do so. Now, there's a lot of countries in the world that do this already. And so we're not recreating it. As I mentioned, California has done it. And others, I know, are moving in that direction. So let's end this stress we're creating on tuition. So very important discussion. And remember, the cost of living in general is tied to an economy that's based on growth without any limits. So, and also it's based on profit. So we need to understand how that relates to the cost of living. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is just say, let's have free education in the state of Minnesota. It can be done. We can transition it in. Nothing shocked to the system. The original phase-in of this program for free higher education in Minnesota will be... part of it will be a reciprocal relationship initially between the needs of the state. So if we need rural doctors, rural nurses, rural teachers, then we will make sure there's a reciprocal relationship of free tuition for achieving those goals. And I know there are programs already for this. We also, I mean, just to go back, there are high school students can also utilize a program for 2 years of free higher education coming out of high school, but that's also fairly selective of those that have certain standards they've already met, higher grade standards and so on, and it's somewhat exclusive. So we want to avoid the exclusivity, if we can, of this access. The other thing is that it will be phasing in the free tuition based upon getting into energy efficiency and renewable energy, getting into local, sustainable, organic farming, getting into the engineering to retrofit our society for sustainable ways of living in durable and repairable goods. You know, we'll be, you know, dealing with a lot of opportunities in planning, our cities replanning, I guess, after the big mistake the last 50, 60 years, on making sure we reestablish more pedestrian planned cities, cluster living, where people can walk, especially in the metro area, walk to their local needs, bicycle, jump on a heavy rail or light rail, you know, establish bus feeder systems, park and rides. So we have a multimodal system where it reduces the cost of living for everybody, reduces stress, simplifies our lives, and gets us in balance with the earth, and leaves future generations something they can live with. Unfortunately, the last generation just has built sprawl, and it's unsustainable and unaffordable, and ecologically, it's collapsing us. So we've got to change that as well. So ultimately, the education of the future, in my opinion, is restoration of our earth, ideally. But of course, higher education is multifaceted, and the needs of the state will be analyzed, and I will be part of working with many people to achieve this goal. But we have got to decide, as a society, what we have in common. And one of the things is that everybody deserves to get equal access to education. And that is, to me, one of the most important steps towards achieving the goals that my administration, the Pentel Proventura administration, wants to achieve. But it's going to be up to you. If you agree with generally where we're going here, then you've got to vote for it. I mean, you can decide. I mean, you don't have to vote for it, but if you believe in it, then voting honestly is what moves a democracy along. Every vote is like leverage into the system. It's a pebble in the pond. And your participation in this is so important in making this transition. So all major liberation movements throughout history that we've known, and I highlighted a number of them that are highlighted, have had third parties as precursors. And so we've had, ending slavery, women's right to vote, labor laws, things like that, that have helped elevate our societies to become better people and move forward. They required third parties to start generating the ideas, running candidates, getting votes, forcing the dominant interests to adopt these positions, because if the dominant interests are going, where are those votes coming from? What are they voting on? And then they start having to deal with it, because it can swing elections. It can make a difference in their power base. So there are many other things, and I'll be talking about democracy soon, but this was just a little discussion on education. Go to the website, or keep looking at the website, call, get involved, add energy to these ideas, and we can change the world. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.